Good afternoon, everyone. It's Thursday, January 26, 2017. We're here to consider our open meeting agenda for today's date and time. We have a quorum of the commission with all members present. We have one undocketed consent agenda item.
Mr. Chairman, we have minutes for the regular open meetings of September 27, November 3, 8, 17, and 22 of 2016, and January 17 of 2017. I move to approve as written.
I concur. Our first regular agenda item is docket number 10,847-CS-16, securities filing of Niobrara Electric Association to borrow $5 million from the National Road Utilities Finance Corporation for finance improvements and upgrading of the Facilities and Service Commission to consider continuing this matter for an additional 30 days. Mr. Mink?
Yes. This application, as originally filed, was deficient, and the deficiency has been cleared up, but it was too late to get this considered before the 30-day deadline. I believe we're going to go for February 7th, but we need to continue. So that's why we're here. I would recommend that you approve.
So moved.
I second.
I concur. Thank you. Our second item is docket number 30,005-222-GP-16, application of Cheyenne Light Fuel and Power Company, DBA Black Hills Energy, for authority to pass on a wholesale gas cost increase of $0.4881 per decatherm for permanent interruptible rate classes effective February 1, 2017. Commission to consider an act on application, petition for confidential treatment of natural gas acquisition strategy and financing financial forecasting, filed on December 29, 2016, and petition for confidential treatment of gas cost invoices filed on January 13, 2017. Ms. McGill, are you with us?
Yes.
Please tell us about the application.
Thank you. Cheyenne Light filed an application on December 29th for a change to the gas cost reconciled rate to be effective February 1st, 2017. The proposed rate is $3.8876 per decatherm, and the current rate is $3.3995 per decatherm, resulting in an increase of $0.4881 per decatherm. The proposed February rate is comprised of two components, the projected gas cost of $3.8545 per decatherm and the deferred gas cost of $0.0331 per decatherm. The purpose of the filing is to adjust the rate for natural gas and commodity-related costs. At this time, we request the proposed gas cost reconcile rate of $3.8876 per decatherm be approved effective on and after February 1st for permanent interruptible rate classes. Thank you.
Questions for Ms. McGill?
No questions.
No questions.
Questions for staff?
No questions. No questions.
Recommendation?
Mr. Chairman, Mayor Katie Koski, Commission Staff Attorney. Staff recommends the Commission approve the application for usage on and after February 1st, 2017, and grant both petitions for confidential treatment by notice and order effective immediately.
So moved.
I concur. Our next item is docket number 30,013-322-GP-17, application of Canada Code Utilities Company for authority to pass on a wholesale gas cost increase of $0.868 per decatherm for firm and residential and firm general service customers and small and large interruptible customers. Commission to consider an act on application and petition for confidential treatment of gas pricing information. Mr. Jacobs, are you with us?
I am.
Please tell us about the application.
Yes, thank you. On January 6th, Montana Dakota filed its monthly application for authorization to pass on purchase gas costs. We are requesting an increase of 86.8 cents per DK for residential, firm general service, small and large interruptible customers, and seasonal customers from the currently effective rates. The reason for the increase since the last filing is due to an increase in the overall commodity price, as well as an increase in pipeline transport rates, resulting in an increase of 86.7 cents and 0.1 cent per decatherm, respectively. We are requesting the PGA to be effective with service rendered on and after February 1st, 2017. The average cost of gas for February will be $4.748 per DK. This filing included a separate application for confidential treatment of Exhibit 3A, pages 1 through 3. This filing complies with the Commission rules as well as Montana Dakota's tariff. This concludes my comments.
Any questions for Mr. Jacobson?
No questions.
No.
Questions from staff?
No questions. Just a quick little comment on the memo. It should say for services rendered on or after February 1, 2017.
Okay. Not January.
Not January.
Okay. Very well. Recommendation?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Lori Brand, Commission Counsel. Staff would recommend approval of the application for usage on and after February 1st, 2017, and grant of the petition for confidential treatment by notice and order effective.
So moved.
I second.
Thank you. Mr. Jacobson? Next is docket number 30,010-158-GA16, application of Questar Gas Company for approval of the 2017 year budget for energy efficiency programs. Commission consider and act on application. First name on the list is Jennifer Clark. Ms. Clark, why don't you tell us who you have with you and let us know who's going to present the application.
Thank you so much. I have Mike Orton with me, Travis Willey, and Barry McKay. And Mr. Orton is prepared to summarize the relief requested, and we have other personnel here to answer any questions you may have.
Please proceed.
All right. In docket number 30010-158-GA-16, the application of Questar Gas Company for approval of the 2017 year budget for energy efficiency programs. The company proposes to increase the ThermWise budget to $224,745, which represents a 4% increase over the 2016 commission-approved budget. As part of this filing, the company has also proposed to make changes to rebate-eligible equipment, such as the introduction of demand-control ventilation units in the business program, the elimination of high-efficiency residential clothes washers from the appliance and business programs, and the continuation of the high-efficiency spray valve initiative. The company is requesting that the budget and proposed rebate measure changes be made effective January 1, 2017. This concludes my summary.
Questions for?
I have no questions.
Okay. Questions for staff or comments?
No questions.
Recommendation?
Yes, Chairman Mayor Kitakoski, Commission Staff Attorney. Staff recommends approval of the application effective January 1st, 2017 by order.
So moved.
Second.
And I concur. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is docket number 10,014-172-CP16, application of Powder River Energy Corporation for authority to increase its cost of power adjustment by $18,393,590 per annum to reflect a change in average wholesale power cost. Commission to consider and act on pre-corp's motion for summary judgment. I think I'm doing this right.
Yeah, if you would, Chairman, that would be
okay.
Real simple.
So we need to have whoever's going to argue this come up a little closer so we can hear you.
Okay.
And let me say, we have read the briefs. In fact, we probably read a little more of the case that's already on file. I think the way I'd like to do this is to give you both about 15 minutes. If we interrupt you, I'll give you a little more time. But I'm not interested in a lot of back and forth. I'm interested in what you have to say about the other party's side. But I think that should be enough for you to get across to us what it is that you think we ought to be doing. And I will say, for my own part, as you know from maybe the last time, if you've been here before, you know that we tend to disclose what we're thinking about so you can react to it and respond to it and have a chance. One of the things that I have to say that I ought to alert movements to is that having been 14 years now in state agencies and having spent some 20 some years before then practicing law, often before administrative agencies, it's always been my observation that if you're an agency, the easiest way to get yourself overturned is by not making a record for the reviewing court. And that can happen whether or not you're lazy lawyers in the agency. It can happen whether or not the parties bring enough material to you to satisfy a reviewing court. But generally speaking, I honestly can't remember ever having voted for a dispositive motion. And I know that we have this rule, but you should be aware of the fact that it's in our rules because the Attorney General insisted that when we revise our rules, we include the common rules that apply to all agencies. I don't think that, just so you know where we're going with this, or I'm going at least, I'm not speaking for them because we can't confer about this beforehand, but you should know that it's in there because we have to have it in there. It's not necessarily in there because it solves the problem an agency has to create a record that will satisfy everything in court. So that would mean even if the concern that I would have from the outset is even if we agreed with Precorp 100% on the law and everything else, I would be inclined to have, which is not a foregone conclusion, so don't frown. Even if that were true, I think we would still want to have a hearing, have a record, give anybody that shows up an opportunity to comment, give ourselves a chance to inquire of the witnesses that show up so we really understand what it is we're doing. So with that, just that caveat, since I don't want you to wander, sort of get halfway through and have us start asking questions that don't make any sense to you about why we're so hostile to this. It's not a matter of hostility. It's a matter of I can see that there is a real issue in this case, a genuine issue that would generate enough heat between the parties that it could result in an appeal. And I am reluctant to have an appeal happen simply because, for whatever reasons, we were too lazy to listen to the parties develop the record. But that being said, I'm willing to hear the motion. So you got about 15 minutes. You can take less if you care to, and people will just pop in with questions as they care to. So Ms. Good, go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman Menear, Deputy Chairman Russell, Commissioner Brighton, Council. I'm Mandy Good from Hearst Applegate. As you know, I'm here on behalf of Powder River Energy Corporation, or Precor. I have with me Jim Tarpey from Ireland Stapleton, Tom Nicholas with Hearst Applegate, and I also have with me the CEO of Precor, Mike Easley. The commission knows that we're before it today because we're asking the commission to rule that any interpretation of the Basin Precor wholesale power agreement, including what goes into Basin's wholesale power rates, is an area that's federally preempted. If the commission does that, we know that they could approve the pass on without refund, subject to any questions by commission staff. I understand Chairman Menear's comments earlier and what those mean. But what we think this boils down to is that it's a disagreement about whether it's appropriate for the commission to analyze what goes into a wholesale power provider's rates. And specifically here, the DGC component of Basin's wholesale power rates, to the extent that can even actually be broken apart. The joint interveners as a whole are not contesting the prudency of Precor deciding to use Basin as a wholesale power provider. They're not contesting the prudency of entering a contract with Basin for wholesale power. They're not contesting that the commission lacks jurisdiction over Basin or Basin's rates. And they're not contesting that Precor is only seeking to pass on that increase in its wholesale power cost in Basin's wholesale power rate, and that turns into Precor's commodity cost. That's all Precor is asking to pass on to its members. The joint interveners are arguing that the commission get into a review of what goes into Basin's rates. And while Kevin Higgins' testimony says he does not ask the commission to go that far, he discusses the fact that Basin's margins are too high. He discusses the fact that they shouldn't have taken over the gasification plant in the first place. He discusses the fact that Basin should have gotten new equity investors instead of passing this on to his member, or onto its members. All of those things go to what Basin should or should not have done. And that's an area that's federally preempted. I'm sure the commission's familiar with the Spence versus Smith case. In that case, the appellants argued that the commission was not getting into this federally preempted area that everybody agreed existed, just like they do in this case. If they refuse to allow the utility to pay a portion of the rate that the wholesale power supplier had asked the utility to pay, and the Wyoming Supreme Court said no, the commission cannot go there. That violates the supremacy clause. It gets into the preemption doctrine, and the PSC would be indirectly asserting jurisdiction that it can't otherwise assert. So I'm not going to re-argue all of the preemption law that the parties have already briefed. What I would like to point out is that it appears the joint interveners are worried about a gap in regulation, and that they're saying because FERC doesn't directly regulate the rates that Basin is passing on to all of its members, the PSC has to, because somebody has to go there. Well, this turning this area over to member owners of cooperatives is exactly what Congress intended. And we know that because this isn't the first time it's been addressed. The question that really is coming before the commission is whether the 2005 Energy Policy Act that created that exemption to the Federal Power Act, saying certain, this narrow, certain group of cooperatives is exempted from regulation by FERC, that whether that exemption means there's no more field preemption and the PSC can step into this exempted piece. But this has been addressed. It's been addressed by a state Supreme Court, and it's been addressed by the U.S. Supreme Court. And it was addressed in that transcontinental pipeline case that we cited the commission to in our brief. And the interveners might say, well, that's a Natural Gas Act case. But the Supreme Court has said, and I'll just quote it to you, they have explicitly recognized that, quote, the practice of citing interchangeably decisions interpreting the two statutes is something that they have undertaken. That's in that Arkansas-Louisiana Gas Company versus Hall case. So this situation arose under the Natural Gas Act and Transcontinental Pipeline. And in that case, Congress enacted a very narrow exemption for a certain type of gas that was at issue in the case. The Mississippi Gas Board, the Intermediate Court, and the Mississippi Supreme Court all said Congress has now deregulated this piece. FERC no longer has oversight, so the states can step in. And that's exactly what's being asked of this Public Service Commission here. The Supreme Court said, no, that's not the case. They said that the removal of specific regulatory oversight based on that exemption did not change the fact that the Natural Gas Act created a comprehensive scheme of regulation over all wholesales of natural gas and interstate commerce. And the same thing is happening here. There is a specific exemption. You're being asked to step in and regulate where that specific exemption is. But that exemption doesn't change the fact that the Federal Power Act is a comprehensive scheme of regulation of all wholesales of electric energy and interstate commerce. So we still have preemption. We still have field preemption here, regardless of that Energy Policy Act exception. This gap in regulation is exactly what Congress intended, and it's working all across the country with cooperatives. And it makes sense because we don't have the IOU situation where the ratepayers are asked to take the risk of a big investment and the shareholders get the benefit. In this case, with the cooperatives, they're member-owned. So your shareholder owners and your ratepayer members are all the same people. So it makes sense that they would go there in this particular area and deregulate this. And then the question comes up, well, could Basin throw anything in these wholesale power rates? And its members, Precor included, and Precor's members included, would have to pay that. To some extent, we think the answer is probably yes, because it's a federally preempted area of law. But to some extent, the contract would control. So if Basin got so out of control that it tried to pass on telecommunications through this particular wholesale power agreement, well, the contract controls. And it says, no, Basin, you don't get to go there. And Precor and all of Precor's other members could react under the terms of the contract and refuse to pay that. Or they could bring a breach of contract. Or they could take several other different lines of defense against Basin in those scenarios. But Basin's members and Precor haven't done that here. And they haven't done that here for a reason. None of them see this big, terrible problem that's being suggested the DGC is. For years, Basin's members and its members' members have seen the benefits of DGC coming through Basin's bottom line to their entities. And they've enjoyed those benefits for years and years. So the fact that this investment, after 20-some years, is having some down years, doesn't mean it was a bad investment. It doesn't mean that all of a sudden it's inappropriate to pass it on. It just means that everybody's going to have to share in their fair share for a time. All of that comes, well, first of all, I'll point out, we did include testimony about DGC and its impact on Basin in our pre-filed testimony through Mark Foss and Sue Sorensen's testimony. We did that not because we think it's material, we did that so that the commission can see that there is there's not this big tiger out there clawing at the door. There's not this big problem out there. We wanted the commission to be comfortable with that.
So why would we be comfortable about that without asking any questions about it? I mean, I understand the representation you're making to me, but I have to say that time and time and time again, representations made by attorneys turn out to have a different gloss on them by the time we get to a hearing. And that's not, I'm not saying that's intentional, because almost everybody that shows up in front of us is a real professional, but sometimes things come out that lend a different color to what we're talking about. It turns out to be fairly essential to understanding both what it is we're looking at now, what we're going to be looking at in the future. And this is not an issue that surfaced before, which is another thing that makes me uncomfortable about agreeing to your analysis. But why wouldn't we want to just hear about that from some witnesses who are knowledgeable about it rather than buying it from you?
Absolutely, Chairman Menear. And that's the reason that we got Basin involved and that we got the pre-filed testimony from the Basin witnesses to try to give the commission another level of understanding in addition to what absolutely we as attorneys have, and it also in addition to what Precor has on some of those issues. The reason we don't think it needs to go to the hearing is because once you get into Basin, the commission can look at the way Precor passes on this wholesale power increase. And there's a lot of things it can and always has done in looking at how that is passed on. But once you get up into the wholesale power rate, the wholesale power agreement, what Basin puts into the wholesale power rate, that's a federally preempted area. And there's no point in dragging out the time and the expense of delving into how Basin is coming up with these things if there's nothing we can do to go into that area. So that's why we think it makes sense to shortcut the process, make this COPA, I guess we can't say it normal in terms of expenses, but less expensive than it would be if we went through the entire hearing on all of the issues that have been raised, despite the fact that a lot of them are in a federally preempted area.
Well, is there any reason why we couldn't decide, however, that what's being proposed to us may not entirely be appropriate for a COPA, but in some respects should be partly general rate case increase or partly COPA? Why can't we decide that? And if we have some concerns about that, why can't we listen to the evidence and decide whether there's a problem there or not?
Well, there's two pieces, I think, to the answer to that. Part of it is, if it's federally preempted, it's preempted whether we're in a COPA case or a general rate case. So if federal preemption applies...
You get your money either way.
I'm sorry?
You get your money either way. Just a matter of us being consistent in how we administer the agency across various electric utilities so that there's some stability in what people can expect of what we do.
Absolutely. And that's a piece of it. The other piece is, in 2001, when the commission enacted the COPA mechanism, my understanding, based on the decisions I've read, is that they enacted it so that there was a quick way to get only increases in wholesale power costs passed on. And then in the next general rate case, the commission still has the ability to come back and consider all of the pieces of what's going into a utility like Precor's rates. But this is a way to ensure that a utility can pass on something that's outside the jurisdiction of the commission, that the utility doesn't have any control over, that the utility isn't adding anything to, and to make sure that the utility gets to move forward and everyone still gets to review what needs reviewed at the next general rate case, because the commission will still come
that.
In.
You've got interim rates. You're collecting rates as we go, so there's no delay in getting what it is that you think you're entitled to. Why would we not look at this in detail at the COPA rather than make it another issue in a rate case that has so many other issues involved? Why would you not take the time in the COPA to look at that?
Well, I think the concern on Precor's part is it doesn't make sense to get into it in either one of the proceedings because it's
so we can't look at it at all. It's none of our business.
The DGC piece.
We can't look at DGC.
I think the argument Precor is making is not that you can't look at it, period. I mean, the commission can look at all of that. The question is, What legally can the commission do about what Basin is putting in its rates? I mean, what legally can the commission do to react to what Basin is doing on the other side of the Basin door?
So what about our obligation to protect ratepayers in Wyoming?
I think you still have every opportunity to
enforce that.
Except
when it comes to Basin and whatever they want to build Precor. We can't protect our ratepayers from those charges.
I don't believe that's accurate.
Okay. Because I really am having a hard time understanding what you think we get to look at and what we don't get to look at.
I don't think that our argument is meant to change anything that the commission generally looks at or does not look at. All our argument is saying is that there is a federally preempted area out here on the other side of Basin. And what goes into Basin's rates is not something that the commission can change. The commission can look at all of these things, and Precor would be happy to come to the commission and report on all of those things. I mean, there are a lot of ways to get the commission more information about those. But in terms of taking action based on what Basin is putting into its wholesale rate, we think that area is federally preempted. So there's no point in having a whole hearing to go into all of that and costing Precor's ratepayers not only the cost of the wholesale power increase, but all of the litigation that goes on top of it. We're already partway there, so part of that is moot. But that's where we're coming from. So in terms of the relief that the joint interveners are seeking, we think that that comes back and supports the argument that there is no need for regulation at this point based on what Congress has said and based on the federal exemption, based on the transcontinental pipeline case. All of what we've talked about supports that. And when you look at the relief the joint interveners are seeking, that supports it too, because they're arguing that all of Precor's ratepayers, all of Precor's members, or a portion of Precor's members, don't need to pay 13 of the 18 million in Precor's increased commodity costs. Well, even if the commission found that, it doesn't change Precor's obligation to make those payments. Precor's still on the hook for its increased commodity cost. And if it doesn't have the ability to make those changes, it doesn't make its OTIER. It fails several other of its RUS ratio obligations. It likely defaults under its wholesale power agreement because it can't make the payments it's obligated to pay to Basin. I mean, this whole area makes no sense to get into when you're looking at not only the fact that it's federally preempted, but the reason for that preemption, that it's member-owned cooperatives that we're dealing with, and there are other methods of controlling what's happening with the rates. So that's part of the concern that Precor has with going forward. But it brings us all back to the fact that it's a federally preempted area. And the argument that Precor is somehow saying the commission now has no role in COPAs because of this is completely inaccurate. All Precor is saying is what the commission has always done is what it should do. The commission can still look at how that's passed on. It can look at whether it's in the energy charge, whether it's in the demand charge, the kilowatt hours, all the things laid out in Section 26, and all of the things that the commission has done since it enacted this mechanism are still there.
Also in Section 26, it talks about whether it's a commodity-related cost. So would you acknowledge that this case presents a factual dispute under our rules about what a commodity-related cost is?
We don't believe so, Commissioner Brighton. And the reason is we don't think you ever get to commodity-related. It says commodity or commodity-related cost increase. This is a commodity cost increase.
Okay. I'll parse it again. Do we get to look at what defines commodity under our rule? Do we get to look at that definition and decide whether the components of the pass-on meet our definition of commodity?
I think the commission always has the right to look at it.
So whether isn't there a factual dispute about that then?
We don't see how there can be.
Well, you think it is commodity. They think it's not. Is that not a factual dispute?
But it has to be a dispute, a genuine dispute of material fact. And the reason
you don't think that's a material fact?
We don't think it's a genuine dispute. And the reason is Precor's commodity is electricity. I mean, you don't get to commodity related because electricity is its commodity. If it's an increase in a commodity cost, I mean, that it doesn't get any more commodity related than the actual commodity cost.
And I really don't want to argue with this document. How is DGC electric related?
Well, and our position is Precor's looking at the commodity cost increase from Basin. So Basin gives it a commodity cost increase. Precor doesn't get to decide, but Precor as a member of Basin can challenge those types of things. But when Basin under the contract passes on a commodity cost increase that complies with the terms of the contract, Precor is obligated to pay that.
So Basin dictates to us what commodity and commodity related means under our rules.
I don't think Basin is dictating any of it. Our position would be that if it's Precor's electric power cost, then it is their commodity. And that's Precor's position, not Basin's position on it.
You have about 20 minutes. Go ahead.
Yes, sorry.
No, that's fine. I was going to say, if you want to turn, it's probably time.
Yeah. I like to be patient.
Is a Precorp aware of any other issues of fact in this docket that are unrelated to the contract?
The primary issue and the issue.
I don't need a listing of them. It's right. Just a yes or no. Are you aware that there could be some other issues of fact in this docket?
I have to admit to issues of fact. It's whether they're genuine and material issues of fact that I think would be the dispute.
Okay. I'm talking about issues that are unrelated to the contract between Basin and Precor.
I believe that there are questions by commission staff about how it's being passed on. Okay. And that those are completely valid questions.
If we grant the relief they're requesting, how do we address those other issues?
Our suggestion in that event would be that the summary judgment is granted on the issue of whether DGC is a preempted area. The discussion of the components of Basin's rate is a preempted area. So we no longer talk about DGC. We could carve that piece out. All of the remaining issues, whatever they would be, questions that staff would have about how this wholesale power increase or Precor's commodity rate increase is passed on, are questions that the commission can, should, and always has delved into, and things that Precor would still have to answer. So we could either work through those possibly before the hearing date, maybe not, or we could do them at the hearing. But we could still go forward with the hearing on those issues and carve out the preempted piece.
So is this a withdrawal that I'm hearing of your request to cancel the hearing?
I think it's up to, I hate to say possibly, it's up to the commission because we think it's stuff that can be resolved and generally is resolved prior to the hearing. So in all practicality, by the time we got to the hearing date, there would probably not be much left, if anything, to deal with if we carved out the preempted piece, which is what goes into Basin's rates. We wouldn't have to cancel the hearing because if those things are not worked out, we could sit here and parse them out at the hearing. So I don't think we're stuck on whether there's a hearing or not. It's whether we get into what we see as the preempted area.
Okay. Let me ask you one question that does relate to the contract. When Basin announces a modification in rates, does Precorp have an opportunity to look at what went into the new rates and how they were determined and evaluate the rate increase or decrease themselves?
Can I take 1 minute to answer that? It might be better answered by someone else.
Oh, sure. You can take a minute.
But also think about whether that's in the record, right? If it ain't in a record,
right.
We got a problem.
I'm going to answer. Precor is aware of what goes into the rates. and Precor has a chance to challenge what Basin is considering doing on the rates leading up to that in a couple of different ways. And this part is in the record, Chairman Menier. We designated the MAC meeting minutes, at least one set of the MAC meeting minutes, as an exhibit. MAC is the Manager's Advisory Council to Basin, which Precor CEO Mike Easley sits on. And Precor does have a chance to challenge what goes into Basin's rates during that process.
Okay. Now, let's say that another rate increase comes along, and I'll use your example. It turns out that part of the rate increase is for telecommunications. If Precor just accepts that and accepts the increase and walks away, would we have authority or jurisdiction to do a prudency review of Precor's unilateral decision to challenge or not challenge?
That is a great question. My first thought, the reason I struggle with it is my first thought is the contract wouldn't allow it. So I can't imagine that Precor would go along with it.
I thought you just told us that the contract does allow a challenge.
No, I need to clarify. The contract wouldn't allow Basin to pass that through as part of their wholesale electric energy rates. So absolutely, Precor could challenge it.
But what if they did not? And let's say some of Precor's members noticed that and wanted to challenge it, and they came here and said, hey, Commission, this isn't a prudent increase. Would we have the authority to look at it, not at what Basin did, but what Precor, the decision Precor made to not challenge?
Yeah, I believe you would. My interpretation of it would be that the commission would.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have.
Do you want another minute?
Yeah, another minute if you want.
I was at the end anyway, and you guys have asked great. All the questions that would have gotten me there. You know that all we're asking is that the commission allow the pass on without refund, and we would hope that we could shortcut the process by cutting out the review of what goes into Basin's rates.
Okay. I'm not familiar with you. I'm sorry.
Chairman Menier, just very quickly, knowing your time is limited. For the record, Paul Hickey of Hickey and Evans, representing joint interveners with me, is Ray Gifford, who is well known to the three of you, and one of Ray's partners, who is well known to me, Phil Roselli. Phil and I have had the opportunity to be professional colleagues for probably over 25 years, going back to regulatory cases that we've handled in Colorado and Wyoming together. We've collaborated on the brief, but Phil will be presenting our argument. I would finally say I think we find ourselves in very much the position that this commission's questions would indicate, and I know Phil is eager to respond to those. So Mr. Roselli will present our argument, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Paul. Your questions reflect, obviously, that you've read the briefs carefully, and so if I'm plowing ground that you're already familiar with, I invite you at any point interrupt, steer me in a direction that you want to go. That's
don't worry.
Fine. I'm sure you will take me up on that.
Not a problem we have here.
Or by the
And I have some prepared remarks, and I'm going to be more brief than that. I'm going to primarily respond to Ms. Good's argument and the questions I heard from the commission. First of all, what I did hear in Ms. Good's presentation is there are lots of facts. There were lots of facts that were thrown out about what DGC is, what its role is, the degree to which it is integrated into Basin, whether it is part of providing commodity or commodity-related service. I would submit to you that latter question, is DGC part of providing electric power, is not just a material and genuine disputed fact. It is the material, genuine disputed fact, and the basis of our intervention and the basis of the briefs that you read. Ms. Good noted that Precor's commodity is electricity. We entirely agree with that statement. That is their commodity. Their commodity is not purchasing things that are not electricity. Not with no intention to be glib about it, we cited in our briefs the notion that surely Precor could not pass on operating losses from a basin, unaffiliated, non-utility, non-electric subsidiary that was, for instance, a minor league baseball franchise. Surely that would not be appropriate for captive retail Precor customers to have to absorb those losses. And surely that would fall within the cornerstone of your regulatory jurisdiction to look at an asset and decide, or a cost, is this utility related? Is this part and parcel of providing electric power, or is it something altogether different? As noted in our briefing, Basin itself, when it announced the mid-year, the intra-year 2016 rate increase, called out that one of the reasons for that rate increase was losses at a non-electric subsidiary, precisely. That's another disputed fact in this case, by the way, which is what portion of the roughly $18 million intra-year Basin rate increase is attributable to covering these DGC losses, to basically providing an equity infusion to make DGC whole again. Joint interveners and Precor have very different thoughts on that. That's a very important disputed fact, and one that's appropriate to take evidence on in hearing. Chairman Menier, you opened this by pointing out this is obviously a summary judgment posture. We sit here today on Thursday. The pre-hearing conference is tomorrow. The hearing starts on Tuesday. That was the point one in my outline, is it makes, aside from the fact that material, genuine disputed issues of fact preclude summary judgment, it's eminently reasonable to hear the evidence in this case, particularly since Precorp has made available two witnesses from Basin. I would think it would make sense for the commission to hear from those Basin witnesses, particularly Mark Foss, who's Basin's general counsel. And I know, having reviewed Mr. Foss's bio, he was apparently the general counsel at Dakota Gasification, DGC, for 27 years before he ascended to become the GC at Basin. So if you have questions regarding the nature of DGC operations and what it is and what it is not, those are obviously questions that can appropriately be put to Mr. Foss when he is on the witness stand at the hearing. The contract, Ms. Good talked about the Basin Precor wholesale power contract, and Precor paints this picture that they simply have no alternative here but to accept whatever Basin puts in that wholesale power rate and pass it through. They're nothing but a pure middleman. But, and this was outlined in the back end of our response brief, it is a wholesale power contract. It's not a contract that requires Precor to pay for it. Let me rephrase that. Requires Precor's customers to pay for anything that Basin wants to put into that wholesale power rate. If that were the case, literally, Basin could put anything into that wholesale power rate. And Commissioner Brighton, I think it goes right to the heart of the questions you're asking, Ms. Good, about what is the meaning of commodity or commodity related under Section 26. If Precor's commodity is electricity, as Ms. Good said, then that's all that should be being passed on to retail ratepayers. And there is a regulatory vacuum here. If you play out, or there could be, if you play out Precor's argument to its logical end, FERC has no oversight over Basin's rates. The parties violently agree on that proposition. We, joint interveners, are not asking the commission to act on Basin's rate. We are asking you to act pursuant to Section 26 to make your determination about whether Precor's pass-on request is valid as to those rate increases to cover DGC's losses. If they do not relate to the provision of utility service, if they are not used and useful costs, it's inappropriate as a fundamental touchstone of regulatory law that ratepayers should have to absorb those costs. We cited in our brief Pacific Power and Light case from your Supreme Court in 1984, and I'm sure you're eminently familiar with it, but it stands for the proposition that power costs or costs related to a half-built and abandoned nuclear power plant not put into service definitionally. That those are not used and useful. It's not a used and useful utility asset. Those are not costs that ratepayers should be bearing. At the end of the day, then, if FERC doesn't have jurisdiction, and if you accept Precor's argument that this commission is preempted from exercising its jurisdiction, then there's nobody. There's nobody, no regulatory agency, state or federal, to pass on the propriety of the costs that are included in the rate that is ultimately passed downstream to customers who have no alternative but to pay that rate.
Well, I've got a question about that, if you don't mind.
Yes.
As if we're talking about definitions, you included in your response the provision of the contract that talks about the appropriate items that they can include in their rate adjustments.
Right.
And it refers mostly, it talks about costs associated with generating plants, transmission system, and then it says related facilities of the seller. Is it possible, in the very broadest interpretation of that term, related facilities, is it possible that the Dakota plant could fit into that definition?
Sure, it's possible in the broadest sense, but that's certainly not a question that can be resolved on a summary judgment posture without hearing evidence from witnesses. You can guess what our position will ultimately be on that. I acknowledge that's a broad and sweeping term, but we didn't get deeply into the facts in our summary judgment response, because that's not the place to argue and resolve facts. But at bottom, DGC, it's a coal gasification company. It provides fuel. It provides fuel for a natural gas generation plant, just like I'm sure lots of other entities who are unaffiliated third parties provide fuel to Basin. That doesn't make it an indispensable integrated part of Basin's utility operations. In our estimation, I'm quite sure Precor is going to argue the opposite side of that, but that just simply underscores why these issues can't be resolved and should not be resolved in a summary judgment posture, particularly with the hearing, you know, right around the corner.
Thank you.
And really, those are, I did want to touch on Spence v. Smythe, since it's been so discussed and is prominent in the party's briefs. And I wanted to point out that was a 1984 decision, and it is a conflict preemption case. The discussion in Spence v. Smythe makes that clear. In Precor's opening brief, they also refer to a North Dakota case, the Hagen case from 1981. And I'm reading right from the Spence v. Smythe decision. The Hagen, that's the North Dakota court, held as we do that the proper place to question the reasonableness and prudence of a wholesale utility rate is in the proceeding before the FERC. There is no, will be, cannot be any proceeding before the FERC here. And the Spence court went on. The result must be that the PSC can accept the federally approved wholesale rate as given. There won't be any federally approved wholesale rate here. Continuing, and decline to require Wyoming distribution facilities to prove that such wholesale rates are just and reasonable under Wyoming rate making law and standards. Once the FERC proceedings are complete, the PSC is required to accept those rates as reasonable, and the PSC can do nothing but accept those rates as given. In other words, you can't war with, you can't spar with the FERC decision. That is the cornerstone of conflict preemption. And the lead cases that Precor cited in this motion, and they're probably familiar to you, Nantahala, Mississippi Power, were clearly FERC conflict preemption cases. The Supreme Court said that later in the Oneup case from 2015 that we cited, and in the Talon Energy case that we cited in 2016. So I guess I'll conclude, and I don't mean to cut off any discussion. If you have questions, by all means, put them to me. But it seems relatively clear that proceeding to the hearing and taking the evidence on these disputed facts is required as a matter of law and is probably the prudential thing to do to ensure that you make a complete record as you deal with this thorny issue, which is if the commission cannot stand in and look at what is baked into that wholesale power rate in deciding whether those costs from Precor then flow down to Precor ratepayers, then literally anything goes, and there is nobody to stand, look at those costs and serve your primary function, which is to protect ratepayers and make sure that rates are just and reasonable. And with that, I'm done with my remarks. And if you have questions, I'll certainly take them.
Any further questions? No. Okay, I think we're ready to, as I said, I could repeat each side a chance, and I think we're ready to think about this. I think it's your turn to go first. I'm getting too old.
I guess I'll start with where the chairman started, a little history lesson on our rules and our experience in summary judgment motions at the commission. As you know, we recently underwent a very extensive process to revise all of our rules. Our chapter two that we had drafted that governed the rules of legal procedure in front of the commission, as has always been the case, did not include the words summary judgment. Because of the uniform contested case rules that the legislature decided all agencies should adopt, our chapter two looks much different as adopted than it was as we drafted it. We were able to enter into some negotiations with the Attorney General's office and the Office of Administrative Hearings on some of those, and that's why chapter two looks sort of as strange as it does. It exempts some things, it adds other language. It's just, it wasn't our preference on how things were to be written. We were not successful on our discussions with those agencies regarding summary judgment, and so it is in our rules. However, as the chairman indicated, we don't do summary judgment motions historically. And so I would just note that for the parties for future consideration in terms of conserving resources and reducing legal expenses. So given that history, I'm not convinced that we even have authority to be looking at summary judgment motions. However, the set of facts in this case before us don't require me to rely on any authority on the authority issue for my decision, nor do I need to get into preemption doctrine or any of those things. It is clear to me, as I indicated during my questioning of Ms. Good, that I believe there are genuine issues of material fact here, mostly related to commodity and commodity-related costs as defined by our rules. And those require the commission to conduct a contested case hearing. So I would move that we deny the motion for summary judgment.
Okay, I'm going to second with comment. First, on our rules, I actually think we were a little bit schizophrenic on how we handled this issue. We did clearly adopt the summary judgment to the rules in the first part of that chapter, but later in the chapter, there's actually a heading for the subject, and I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's basically summary disposition. And the only thing we say there is not adopted. And I can't remember exactly how we got to those two varying points of view, but there was at least a little bit of an intent not to adopt that. And even if we had, I am in the same position as Commissioner Brighton in that I don't think the law is crystal clear on whether we have summary judgment authority or not. And if we don't statutorily, then whatever rule that we promulgate can't override that anyway. So that being said, I'm not sure we have it. So I would say number one, I'd rather not act for on that reason. But to the point, to the level that we do want to talk about whether or not we would grant summary judgment if we have it, I think there are clearly issues of fact that need to be examined and decided. And I also agree with what Chairman Menier said up front, is that one of our primary duties is whenever we have an issue before us, we have a duty to create a record. And I think we should go forth and create that record. And so I agree with Commissioner Brighton that we should deny the motion.
Okay, I'll concur, and we'll have to draft an order of some sort. We'll kind of mush together what our positions are by the time we get an order. But that probably will, I'm not expecting that to happen before we go ahead with the hearing. I'm going to say a couple other things since this is kind of an unusual case. It seems to me there really are some thorny issues in this particular case, right, wrong, or different. So at the end of the hearing next week, I would not expect us to deliberate. As you know, 90% of the time, We can tell where we're going with it, but I think we really do want to figure out what the facts are. We really do want to think through what's in the records. So I would encourage you to be aware of the fact that we won't do that. That leaves you with another choice, which is to either try to talk to us in closing arguments, which is often effective. You have the option to file briefs. If we do that, we will file the briefs will be required probably within a couple of days at most of the transcripts being available from Court Reporter, because we intend to keep this moving. One thing we do get, just what, I don't know, it's not probably that much comfort to pre-court, but I think we have been very supportive about keeping all this stuff moving. And this is not going to sit anywhere for very long. We will make up our minds about this, but you need to think a little bit about whether you want to try to talk to us through oral argument at the close of the evidence, or whether you prefer to do that with briefs. And we're amenable to it either way. By you have a right to file briefs if that's what you choose to do. Often it turns out to be better if you kind of catch us and yourself at the end of the hearing, because frankly, frequently there's some consensus about what the crux points are then that are apparent, and everybody's thinking about it. So it's, sometimes it's more effective that way. But I want to let you know that it's not going to be done basically as soon as the panels go down on the afternoon of the second day. So we'll look forward to seeing you all then. And this is really kind of an interesting case. I'm sure that's no comfort to anyone. but we're looking forward to hearing it. And we'll see you all next week. And you'll see the verbiage come out. Are you?
Yes, that's correct.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
So we're adjourned for today. Our next regular open meeting, by the way, is scheduled for February 2nd.